the right people come together at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Welcome to the best soccer show. The best soccer show in the whole world.
Here we go! It's the best soccer show. Jason Davis, Jared Dubois, live on a Wednesday. It's a special emergency edition of the United States.
United States men's national team.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Meeting of people who care about the U.S. men's national team.
You were professional.
I've wrecked my camera already because I got thrown off.
We're at a Wednesday. Dude, classically, what TV show do you think of on Wednesday nights, like growing up? Like, what was a Wednesday night show for you?
Man, I don't remember Wednesdays.
What was a Wednesday night? Was 90210 a Wednesday night show?
Maybe I don't remember watching 90210 when it was airing.
Nick's saying Home Improvement. Is that their big lineup of shows with Wednesday for that? I think it was Tuesday.
It was probably like Step by Step. Or was that a Friday night show?
Wednesday? No, that's a Friday night show.
Friday night show.
I think Wednesday night might have been X-Files.
Maybe. Yeah, but I wasn't nerdy enough to watch X-Files when it was airing either. I was nerdy, just not that nerdy. I remember in college, people would have little like watch parties. For X-Files. Like eight people in a dorm room watching X-Files. I'm like, really?
And think of it now. All that shit's coming true. Like, all the alien stuff's real. I'm telling
you. Now the smoking
y'all.
Man is really here somewhere running QAnon. That's what's happening.
I'm going to tell you, too. It's not aliens. It's just the people who live deep in the oceans.
Oh, so you believe in, like, an Atlantis theory, not a lizard
advanced
theory?
Civilization. Oh, yeah, for sure.
We have convened.
Powered by hydrodynamics coming up from the Earth's core, coming up through the crust.
Okay, this is getting super into stuff I don't really have time for.
Just letting y'all know.
We have convened this emergency edition of the Best Soccer Show because the CONCACAF Champions League is happening right now, Jared. That's why we're here, right? To follow along with the shenanigans with, like...
I don't know if I can name the teams in it.
There's like eight people in Colorado because it's butt cold out there. There's like five people in Los Angeles because New York City FC is not from Los Angeles, and yet they're playing at Bank of California Stadium. I think there's
smart,
more people.
Smart, though, with the Galaxy game on the weekend. I think smart on the travels perspective.
That's why they did it, and also because they can't play at Yankee Stadium right now. And Montreal is at home. They had to delay their game from yesterday because it's been snowing up in there in Quebec, and they're winning. Anyway, that's not why we're here. We're here... Because one reason is we didn't get a chance to do a Sunday show as usual, and we owe people a show, but also because Weston McKennie is out for 3 to 4 months with a broken foot, Jared. I mean, you know, you think about the worst possible injuries for a soccer player, and yes, knees are bad and all that, but foot injuries, man, like, why? Why now?
If I was going to pick things in descending order of what I don't want my players to have,
knee.
Hamstring,
okay.
Then foot. That's the direction.
I mean, regardless, it's broken metatarsals. I barely know what those
somewhere
are.
In the between that sex tape.
I just know. Okay, I just know that there's bones in the foot is complicated, right? It's a complicated part of your body. There's lots of little tiny bones. He breaks his foot in the Champions League match. And now the United States will not have him for World Cup qualifying for the last three games. Of the octagonal, and you know, Jared, what did we do as a fan base, as a country? Maybe this is a country thing. You know, maybe people who don't care about soccer have some role to play in this. What did we do to anger the soccer gods so much that they refuse? They just will not allow us to have Pulisic and Reyna and Adams and McKennie all in the field together.
It has something to do with Jeff Cameron's views on things. The world... is punishing us for the way Jeff Cameron is represented.
Are you allowed to?
Damn, dog.
In a pro.
You know, he's seen his sideburns and his eyebrows?
He's a big guy. I mean, if you mess with his facial hair, he might come after you. You don't know. I mean, he's in Cincinnati. He's all juiced up
I'll be fine. I'm
on
white.
Skyline Chili. The guy's like hopped up on Skyline Chili. He might come after you. He and Rose Lavelle might tag team. I don't even know what's going on with that. Something to do with all of it. You know, look. This leads us to that question, Jared, of what now? And again, we've got the phone lines open at 717-727-2378. plenty of time for people to call us up and talk about what happens now. And we always do this, right? The thing we ask is, how do you feel about this team?
Take us to DEFCON 3.
On the DEFCON scale, DEFCON 5, it's all gravy. We're fantastic. We're chilling out. We feel great about our chances to go to the World Cup and maybe even make some noise once we get there. 4, all right, you know, there's some concern, but we're still pretty confident. 3, it's getting a little dicey, but, you know, we're maybe on the right track. 2, oh, man, do we need to make some changes? Do we have to worry about some things? DEFCON 1, the world is about to end. The bombs are about to fall. Get in your bunker because the nuclear winter is coming. Where are you right now?
I think it's a hard 2. It's hard to say you're DEFCON 1 when just one player is missing and you're in second place. That being said, the U.S. national team is definitely over the last 2 cycles made us nervous at any extent. No matter, there's not enough safety. You're not in Canada's position. You know, you still have to get a result in somewhere in here, and you may have to get 2 results. One win at home may not be enough. So it's really at the point now, the thing about the Weston McKennie injury, and there's 2 things that are really, I think, making this window difficult. The Weston McKennie injury and Tyler Adams sitting on a yellow card, potential yellow card accumulation.
Yes.
It almost makes it now where the Mexico game doesn't matter. I mean, honestly, if you're looking at these 3 games, do you go hard on the Mexico game, play Tyler Adams, and then you're potentially no Tyler Adams, no Weston McKennie in your home game against Panama?
This is the question. This is what makes it difficult because, I mean, if you're not the one having to make the decisions, if you're just sitting on the sidelines, you're just a fan, you're looking at it, you say, look, this is a Mexico team that is ripe to be beaten at the Azteca by the United States. The talent for the U.S., and this is prior to the Weston McKennie injury, and maybe it does change your ideas about what to do once you get to the Azteca, but this is not a great Mexico team. Right, they're struggling a little bit right now. They don't know whether to play Hector Herrera in the midfield. They don't know what their goal scoring situation is going to be. Obviously, Alan Pulido is injured. They got Rogelio Funes Mori. He's okay. He's not special. They're not calling in Chicharito Hernandez. You can talk about Raul Jimenez, but he is not where he was prior to his injuries. So this looks like the chance. And what more do we want? Look, if you ranked the things that we want as national team fans, right? Number 1 is winning the World Cup. There's no doubt about that, right? Number
Making
1
the World Cup, to be honest with you.
Well, hold on. Wait, no. I know that we have to have realistic expectations. I'm just saying we're dreaming right now, right? Okay. We're in a dream world. You fall asleep tonight.
Weston McKennie's got a healthy foot. I'm there.
Okay, the national team is in your brain as you fall asleep. Your head hits the pillow. It's a glorious dream. It's one of those dreams where you like know you're dreaming and you can control things in the dream.
Who's the player in your mind as you fall asleep? What's the player that's in your mind?
Wait,
right?
Is this a dreamy player? A player we love to watch.
It's dreamy.
Player.
It's dreamy.
That's a dreamy player. I think, I don't know. Are there any dreamy players in the national team right now? Who's the dreamiest player in the national team?
Okay. If we're just talking about looks.
Yeah. Well, that's what dreamy means, right?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. He's not necessarily in the team, but he should be maybe in the near future. Uh-huh. Aaron Long is probably the dreamiest player on the men's national
Aaron
team.
Aaron Long is the dreamiest player. Okay.
No, Morgan's shaking her head.
Aaron Long
no.
takes he makes questionable hair choices.
Oh, this
Aaron
is a
Long.
Good shout. I'm not going to say who in the chat should put this out there, but Miles Robinson's a good shout.
Miles Robinson is
a
dreamy.
Handsome damn man.
He's a dreamy dude.
And he's tall, too.
He's a tall drink of water, as they like to say.
I bet you he dances well.
He's a long
like,
walk.
As a partner, like, don't you want to have a tall guy spin you
so
around?
So wait, hold
like
on,
that?
Hold on. I know this is very best soccer show, but now we have like 3 different asides going. Who's the dreamiest? Who's the best dancer on the national team?
I was talking as a partner dancer. I see Miles Robinson being a good partner dancer. Well, okay, he's a center back. He has to have chemistry with another person to do his job.
You still have to have rhythm, whether you are a good dancer by yourself or a partner. You have to have rhythm. I'm just curious who people think is the best dancer. I don't think anybody's going to say Christian Pulisic.
Based off his celebration, I'm not sure it's Pulisic.
No.
He didn't commit to it. You
well,
know, like, as
first
soon as
of
he
all,
did, he was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Let me ask a question of one Mr. Jared Dubois here.
Jay Rodius.
Are you aware of the dance he was attempting when he celebrated his Champions League goal against Lille? Do you know what
it's
called?
Oh, no, I had no idea. I had to look it up.
Okay, but you've heard, now gritty. You know about the gritty. You know what a gritty is now. You didn't know about it before.
Had no idea.
Okay.
I thought that's how I describe certain breakfasts, like that are made from like wheat.
I thought it was the corn, mascot for the Philadelphia Flyers. That guy, that's Gritty,
oh, that
right?
Too, yeah,
that
yeah.
guy, that big weird thing with the beard. Oh, anyway, obviously that's not it. Who's the best dancer? Who's the dreamiest?
Wes McKinney has to be the best dancer, right? There's no, he has way too much. Yeah, yeah, wait, yeah. No, I take it back. Tim Way is the best dancer.
Oh, okay. You know, you're right. I think you're right. I think it's
because everyone says he's in charge of the music in the locker room. Everyone says he's in charge of the music. The guy that's in charge of the music in the locker room, I think, is probably the best dancer, which means maybe Clint Dempsey was back in the day, too, on that generation.
I don't think Clint had...
Charlie Davies had him. Never mind. Charlie Davies had him.
Clint, yeah, no, for sure, when Charlie came in the team. All right, let's come back to this, right? Because obviously, again, this is what we're concerned about. What I think when you talk about these three games, if Weston McKennie is completely healthy, I think there is a legitimate argument for you playing your best team no matter what's going on with Tyler Adams and his yellow card accumulation against Mexico, because you have a chance, maybe. And look, again, this is my point. The things we want as national team fans, we want to win the World Cup. Everybody wants to win the World Cup. That's number one on the list. But somewhere not too far down is beat Mexico at the Azteca. Right? Because we haven't done that. We've done it one time in a friendly. Yeah, Michael freaking Roscoe.
I'm sorry, American fans. You may have to hold that one up for another 8 years. I don't know that this is going to be our window to do it.
This is the hard thing. That you may have to not sacrifice that game, but you may have to choose to play that game a certain way, maybe to try to get a single point, but also look ahead to Panama and Orlando a couple days later, and then ahead to Costa Rica and San Jose.
It's a tough thing because when the McKennie Adams issue brings a lot of things to a head. I'm pretty strongly feel that Tyler Adams probably won't be playing in that game. It's just too much of a risk. So.
So now without McKennie in the midfield, you take such a step back. I mean, you take a step out without him.
Agreed.
And I think.
So here's the thing. Here's the question, though. Do you give a guy like Luca Della Torre a chance in that game? But you probably want him because you. I don't know, but let me finish this part of the conversation first. Okay. So if you play Luca Della Torre because, okay, you need more midfielders. Okay, you got no McKennie, no Adams. He seems like a natural guy in the pecking order.
Oh, no, I think he should be on the team.
But then you don't potentially have him as the guy you want in the Panama game. You know, can he go those two back-to-back? Does he not pick up a knock or anything like that? I think I'd rather keep Luca Della Torre for that game, keep Tyler Adams for that game, because I think your best chance to win against Panama at home is having Tyler Adams, Luca Della Torre, and Yunus Musa in the midfield for the Panama game.
Oh, no. I don't think...
I don't think that gives you the best chance to win at home against Panama, that midfield?
Maybe it does. I think that you're talking about two players in Della Torre and Musa who are too similar in their responsibilities in that part of the field. Against Panama, you're going to have
the ball. But
you're
playing at home. You're playing to win.
I understand. I think that... The guy you're missing here maybe a little bit is Gianluca Busio, who I think comes back into the team.
He's been a little bit like out in Venezia, though. Okay, like, do you think he's the guy that's most in form right now?
I mean, he was out.
You could make an argument for Tessman over Busio right
he
now.
He missed. Okay, I don't think you can. Not based on his familiarity with the system and the work he's already done in the national team. Nicholas Murray saying Acosta, Busio, Musa at Mexico. Now, this is putting Kellen Acosta at the six in place of Tyler Adams because of the yellow card situation. I think that's probably likely. I mean, if you are going to play Adams, I think Acosta's probably still on the team, Jared. And I'm not saying that that's ideal. It's not. I'm not saying that even Acosta is necessarily the best replacement for McKennie, although I think he is the most athletic replacement for McKennie. And what Acosta brings you is something we saw against Honduras in St. Paul. Which
Acosta's going to be on the field somewhere in Mexico. Whether it's Tyler Adams or even if Tyler Adams is playing, I think Acosta is in that midfield, even if you do play Tyler Adams. Because Acosta, it gives Berhalter a lot more comfort in terms of stopping Mexico's attack and also puts that threat that we were talking about on the field. Then one of the big things, there's so many reasons why losing McKennie is so harsh in this window, but... Think about the opportunities you would likely get in Mexico away. Set pieces.
Yeah, that's what
Who's
I'm saying.
Who's the best set piece finisher that we have?
It's not
one of the smallest guys on the field.
It's not as though you lose Weston McKennie and then somehow Kellen Acosta being in the team raises it back up to the same level of effectiveness for the entire group. McKennie is that good of a player, that important. He covers that much ground. He does that much work. he connects things in a way. I don't think there's another midfielder in the U.S. pool who can connect things the way that McKennie does, just with layoffs and quick little passes. And again, winning second balls, tracking back, all those things. But you give yourself, in a game where you are less likely to have control of the ball, and I know the United States bossed the game a little bit more in Cincinnati than we're used to against Mexico. I don't think that's going to be the case at the Azteca. Probably wouldn't have been, even if McKennie was in the team. And since that's the case, well, then let's. I mean, again, you want McKennie on the field. If he's not going to be on the field, well, then now Kellen Acosta gives you that extra element of danger. Now, you lose McKennie as a target. That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah. You got to figure out, you know, okay, is it Zimmerman? Is it Zimmerman? Is it Robinson? Is it, who else is it back? Is Chris Richards coming into this team and he's going to be asked to start there?
I don't think it's Ricardo Pepi, because I don't know if he's going to be starting. I don't know if he's going to be playing, man. That's a tough space right now. PFOC is making a really, really strong case to be the guy at his club level.
I don't want to talk about striker yet. I want to get people's thoughts.
Let's do what you want to do.
On what the mid? We're in the midfield. We're talking about the midfield. Why would we go walking
up
the striker?
I'm all over the place, baby.
Just stay here in the midfield.
I'm playing jazz over here.
I know you are. I know you are. That's why you're talking about dancing and what was the other thing? Good looking guys. Okay. Come on. I guess my other way of phrasing this, the other way of kind of contextualizing the choices that Berhalter has is, knowing that the Panama game is a game you have to win. If you don't win the Panama game, you're probably not making the World Cup, right? To count on a victory in Mexico or Costa Rica is crazy. So
you're not going top three if you don't win that game. You can potentially still get in that fourth place position and still play your way in.
Yeah, you could conceivably get. And look, by the way, they would be heavily favored in a playoff. I'm not saying I want it. I'm not saying you want to add that extra element, that variable, and potentially miss the World Cup because you had to play in a playoff. But at this point, am I going to be are beggars going to be choosers? I mean, I know that people will come down on Berhalter for not finishing top three, right? I know that. I don't want to get to that right now. But
as they should.
Sure. But you know, again, you get to the World Cup how you get to the World Cup. That being said, do you think that Berhalter's choice, do you just play sort of a fully second choice team against Mexico, sit deep and hope you find a counterattack? Or do you kind of mix bag it a little bit? Like, okay, well, we're going to play some frontline guys. Like Pulisic, he can start the Azteca. You also have him for Panama, but maybe you're not playing him against Costa Rica. I mean, I don't know. Could you blow the doors off and play the same team three times, knowing that Tyler Adams might be missing?
Greg Berhalter's track record shows that he doesn't have a desire to do that. He is a matchup coach. He looks at the matchup. He sees, I mean, he usually has a game plan. It seems like he has a game plan of what guys are going to play what games before the window even starts. And that's probably good, because he's a coach. He should have an idea of that. But you seem to feel like he's going to have it picked out already and what the cycle this is going to be. The question is he going at all aggressive in Mexico, or is he going for a 0-0 draw? That's the only question.
And that's the thing. A 0-0 draw would be a great result at this point in Mexico, going into the game on Saturday or Sunday.
But can you pull off a 0-0 draw without Tyler Adams on the field?
That's a good question. It's a good question. A couple things in the chat I want to get to before we get to Javier in California. We've got somebody who said that Mexico fears the United States right now, which is an interesting idea. We also have Burnman 23, who says, in a flat 4-4-2, play in a 4-4-2, which is Mexico's greatest fear. Obviously, the United States have been playing in a 4-3-3. I don't know if we see a system shift, although I wouldn't mind an empty bucket against Mexico when the point is fine.
I think you're far more likely to see a 3-5-2 than a 4-4-2 bucket, or even a flat 4-4-2. He hasn't played it at all.
No.
It's not what Berhalter does. Now, we have seen Berhalter a couple of times come out and do some really wacky things in game one of a window that are not necessarily what the other team is expecting. So maybe he does that for Mexico and tries to really blow up their game plan.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, man. That's a lot of real pettiness to play with, but I love it when he gets petty against Mexico. So maybe you do.
Tamale Killer, back again, says, what are we talking about? Going for a tie. Win, baby. Win all matches is the goal. Going for a tie is more dangerous than going for the win. Do you buy that? I mean, look, I don't necessarily buy that, right? I think this is a sport where playing for the draw is sort of a tried and true strategy, and plenty of teams have succeeded in their ultimate goals by playing for a draw. Now, you play for a draw with the notion that you'll take advantage of a counterattacking opportunity or get a set piece, and then who? Well, here we go. Now we get 3 points. Maybe we have a chance at that, right?
Yeah.
I think that you need to be so organized initially to give yourself a chance to extend the game, to make Mexico worry about it, to give them a sense of panic, and then who knows? Maybe there's a mistake there. I mean, we're not – we get whatever system he plays – they're not going to be pressing.
I think the more likely thing is Berhalter plays a 4-3-3 with players like Areola with Areola and Aronson up front because of what they give on both sides of the ball. Yeah. I think that's the way he gets that more presence in midfield without fully committing to a 4-man midfield. Yeah. Is having guys that are less. Aronson is forward minded. I don't want to say that.
When we talk about 4-4-2, 4-3-3, I mean, in the attack, you're playing 4-3-3 with a couple of midfielders ahead of a defensive midfielder, again, usually Tyler Adams. If you're when you're defending, it's not going to stay that way, right? You're going to have a midfielder drop deeper in order to help that clean up that space where Adams would otherwise be on an island. Obviously, you worry about counterattacking opportunities coming the other way. And that may be an issue if you don't have Weston McKennie there to make recovery runs and be a defensive presence. But again, if you trust Luca De La Torre, if you trust Yunus Musa, if you trust Kellen Acosta in that situation, whether it's Adams on the field or not.
You know, it's funny. You talked about this earlier when I said putting Musa and De La Torre in the midfield together. It really is Acosta as a backup for Adams. De La Torre and Musa fighting out for kind of the same position.
Yeah, exactly.
What we haven't established really is who is the Weston McKennie backup. And I think a few months ago, it was fairly clear to be Busio, you know, but I don't know. I feel quite the same way right now. But
well, they're so different, right? Even if you could say having Busio on the field is fine against most teams. He's gonna play deeper. He's not playing defensive. He's playing deeper.
And he's gonna try to spring the attack through passing, whereas McKinney's going to try to carry the ball, try to beat a guy, not to Moose's level,
he's going to combine, and McKinney's going to make runs in behind. He's going to play into space. He's going to lay the ball off and make
a run. And I think Busio likes to play in the passing lanes defensively, whereas McKennie likes to try to get into the tackle, get tight on the guy. That's his defensive style.
It's also a matter of when those pressing triggers happen, and I don't think Busio's a pressing player, so you kind of lose that too. All right, we've been waiting, we're letting Javier wait for us, so let's get to him. Javier in California, you're on the Best Soccer Show. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, man.
Luke?
That could be better. Could be better. Weston McKennie broke his foot. Could be better. Oh.
This is true. Yeah, so like the reason I was calling is because I just wanted to get my take on this. So like essentially my biggest concern is I think like fundamentally if our team had like a perception or an image or an identity just throughout qualifying, it was MMA. Right? Yeah. And like,
well, but hold on, Javier.
That's a story of this cycle.
That didn't even happen. MMA didn't really even happen till October, though. So, and I mean, I know that feels like a long time ago, but in terms of the number of games they played since then, it's only about halfway through that MMA really kind of coalesced, right? So I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that finally happened, but it didn't happen way back in the beginning of qualifying. We had to wait a long time for it to come together.
Right. Fair enough. But like, agree with me where you can. Like, we are better with MMA. Right?
Yes, for sure. Yes,
I think
absolutely.
we're all in agreement here. So, like, I just want to throw this question out there. So this is something I was thinking about last window. So, like, when we come, you know, not backs against the wall, but we got, what, Panama in our court? Something I was thinking about was, like, you know what? Kellen Acosta could be pretty valuable. You know, just serving up some delicious set pieces. But, you know, at the time, like, you know, you were never going to take off McKennie or anyone in our midfield just to slot Kellen Acosta in. But I don't know. I just wanted to get your guys' take on that.
Look, there's give and take everywhere.
Acosta
plays
a minimum 2 games, maybe all 3.
There's a minimum. There's a give and take no matter what. You threw me off there. Yes, you're right. I think he does play a minimum 2 games. Again, here's a comment that I think is interesting from Birdman23 again. We've had to rotate MMA and have at least one not available. That has happened multiple times and had to rotate. I mean, that's Berhalter's choice, right? We're also worse with MMA versus a bunkering team, right? So the idea is...
It's hard to say worse because we haven't really played much else against a bunkering team. You know, that's... it's That's hard to say. There's not enough data of when they're not together against a bunkering team. The whole team struggles, not just MMA. The whole team struggles against a bunkering team because you have Pulisic trying to do too much.
Yeah.
You know, you've got guys that are just, I think the one place on the field we don't struggle against a bunkering team is Tim Weah. Tim Weah is the key to unlocking a bunkering team because he's the only guy getting behind and forcing defenders to turn their body and play the other direction. Everything else is in front of them. So Tim Weah is extremely key for that Panama game.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. I think that if you're talking about a player who on the dribble can make things happen, he's the only one. I mean, Pulisic,
and him in conjunction with Dest as well. I think that the two of them together on that side of the field really forces Panama to bad matchups.
I ignored Pulisic. I shouldn't, especially considering he scored yesterday, and you have to imagine his confidence level is rising. Yeah. But Dest is a weapon deployed strategically, and you wonder. I do wonder about that part of this. And so we've been focused on midfield because you have to replace him, but obviously there's a knock-on effect. So, Javier, would you have an idea of how the rest of the team looks if McKennie's not there against Mexico? Let's focus on that game first.
Versus Mexico, I have no idea. No clue. I mean, I would throw Kellen in there simply because the last cycle where we were trying to qualify, I believe Michael Bradley and Kellen Acosta were in the midfield. So he's been there. He's done that. He knows what it takes. He knows what to expect. So I'd probably throw him in.
Okay. Interesting. Appreciate the call. Javier in California jumping on here.
Hey, there's no way Dest starts that Mexico game, though.
I can't.
There's no way.
I don't think so. I think especially considering you don't have McKennie as the release valve that you kind of, and a guy who's going to cover a lot of space and make runs, defensive runs.
Do you think Yedlin gets that game with him now?
No, I think it's
between
canon.
Teams, hasn't had a competitive game in a while. It's canon, no. Right?
I think it's canon. I think it is canon. I think
and even
still,
Scally's not getting minutes now at Borussia Mönchengladbach.
I think you're still going to see Robinson on the other side. I think those two positions I'm fairly confident about. Again, I think Acosta is in the midfield somewhere. I wonder about Musa in the game against Mexico. I don't wonder about Musa against Panama, but I wonder about him in that game against Mexico. I mean, Adams
I feel
is the
like
big
you,
question.
You hold Musa, you hold Adams, and you have two really strong, your strongest midfield possible for the Panama game and the Costa Rica game. That's just the way it has to be. Mexico has to be tabled. I'm not saying you give up. I'm just saying that if you're going to de-emphasize a game, and we constantly do in a three-game window, there's a game that's kind of a consolation game in Berhalter's lineup where it's just not the same quality of people. Mexico's that game. It wasn't a week ago, though.
Well, here's Mike in Philly. The game theory of this qualifying cycle has been exhausting. That's exactly true. I mean, it's nuts because we want to be able to judge the team, judge the players, and judge Berhalter on the performances game to game, thinking only about that performance in that game and the opponent that they're playing. But you can't separate that performance, that game, that decision-making from Berhalter from the wider context of the window or of the qualifying process. And you know, there are fair and legitimate criticisms. I mean, I don't think they should have gone and only gotten a point in Jamaica, considering where Jamaica was at that moment in time. And obviously, the Panama game stands out, too. If you win that game
away, dropped points against Canada at home.
Absolutely. Second game of qualifying, right? So, yeah. I mean,
here's the crazy thing, Jay. Like, we've been talking McKennie up. There might be people who are not up on the news, maybe wondering why we're not talking about another guy that could potentially step into the midfield, and that's Gio Reyna. We haven't even mentioned Gio Reyna and what happened to him this week.
We haven't. He did come off after half an hour after getting his first start for Dortmund since that injury
with
the national
too.
Team.
Was looking good for 27 minutes.
So Dortmund put out a statement that said it's not serious, that he didn't tear something. Now, they also said in the statement, it's not a serious thigh injury. Now, he had been out with a hamstring injury.
He was holding his thigh a little bit. You could tell that. It looked like it was more thigh.
I feel like this is a compensation injury. He doesn't trust the hamstring completely. He's compensating. His body's doing something he doesn't even realize is happening. Next thing you know, he pulls his thigh. If he only pulled it, it's very possible he's ready to go. Now,
I don't think he's ready to start.
I don't know. That's a good question.
They're saying 2 weeks timetable.
I also don't know if I buy the notion that you're playing him in the midfield against maybe against Costa Rica in the finale, if you're basically qualified at that point. But I don't think you're starting him in the midfield in Mexico, and you're not starting him in the midfield against Panama in Orlando. You're just not doing that.
Do you even bring him on in Mexico as a sub? Do you just hold him and give him an extra like 4 days?
I mean, it depends on how that game is going. If that game is already, look, if you're salting away a goalless draw, you don't bring him on, right? You definitely don't do that. You bring on Areola and have him run Mexico ragged, or you bring on Jordan Morris and have him do the same. I don't know.
Oh, there's a dichotomy in the chat right here between Brown on Boxing saying, if Gio's available for those last three games, bring him in. And then Frank in Orange County going, don't bring Reyna. is Reyna on mothballs and just save him hopefully for the World Cup at this point?
You can't count on the World Cup yet. So why would you put him on mothball? I mean, it's got to be all hands on deck in the final window. If you are healthy enough to be called up, you should be called up if you're good.
Do you fly out Weston just for the chemistry factor?
I saw somebody cheerleader say, effect. It was, shout out to Ryan Rosenblatt, who said this. He said, this sucks for Weston, but you got to bring him in. You got to have him with the team just for the vibes and the potential celebration of qualifying.
You fly in Weston McKennie, and you fly in Frankie Hayduk, and you just let them go hog wild for a week.
I don't know.
Bring him around the team.
I mean, I know Frankie can probably get along with anybody, but do you think they would really vibe? Do you think that would be a connection?
I mean, there's a generational issue there. But in terms of the energy and like the fan base and like just having him around the team, the positivity that Frankie Hayduk brings.
I'm just imagining Frankie wanting to put on like, I don't even know what would be a band that he would go for. That would be like, what would his first choice band be?
Maybe like Ozzy Motley or something like that.
Chili Peppers or something. And then, I mean, that's actually kind of groovy. Maybe.
In my mind, I picture Weston calling him Uncle Frankie.
Oh, that could be a good sitcom idea right there. Weston McKennie. Maybe. I mean, I saw a picture. I think it was his personal chef's Instagram account where Weston is sitting on the couch, foot up in the air on his phone. You know, he did the Instagram thing where he put like a bird perched on Weston's foot, like there was a bird there. I mean, Weston McKennie laying around.
Weston McKennie knows who Frankie Hayduk is?
Yes, I do think he knows.
How far down, like let's take like the 2002 World Cup team. Do you think there's anyone on that team, that Weston McKennie has no idea who that person is?
Oh, yes, 100%.
Where's that point? Because it's not John O'Brien, right? He would know who John O'Brien is.
I would think so.
Is that person Tony Sanna?
Oh, I don't. Tony Sanna is very active, very much a figure within soccer, especially.
I'm going
to
say he knows
man.
Who Tony Sanna is because Tony Sanna played in Germany.
Yeah.
Weston McKennie played in Germany. It's probably people that knew the same players.
All right, tell me. You ready? I got the buzzer. I got the ding. You ready for this?
Yeah.
You tell me. All right, so Brad Friedel. Does he know who Brad Friedel is?
Yes, because he's done commentary for a while. Okay. I think Brad Friedel, I mean, he was huge in the EPL.
Sure.
So when Weston was coming up.
We already talked about Frankie. We're going to say yes, but no. So obviously Greg Berhalter was also on that team. I think you know who Greg Berhalter is.
Yeah, I think he's familiar.
Pablo Mastroeni, coaching in Major League Soccer right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. John O'Brien. David Regie. Does he know
no chance. No chance. No chance. He's going to be like the chick with Kathy Lee. I mean, the dude with Kathy Lee. He doesn't know who Kathy Lee is.
Eddie Lewis. That one's dicey, I think. He played. Eddie
Lewis. Even people our age slept on Eddie Lewis.
That's true. People did sleep on.
Unfortunately,
Eddie
slept on Eddie Lewis. The quality player.
Ernie Stewart. He should hopefully does.
Absolutely.
That's like not knowing who the principal is at your school. Like who? I don't know who that is. Let's see. Joe Max, whose birthday is today, I believe. Or yesterday.
No chance.
No, today.
No chance he knows Joe Max.
Doesn't know Joe Max? Okay.
Which name does he go by? How do you figure it out? It's too much.
Claudio Reyna. Absolutely, right?
You know what? After this game is over, we need to ask Morgan how many she knew, because that answer is the same. Whatever Weston McKennie knows, she knows.
Cletus. Does he know who Cletus is?
I think Cletus got too much flavor not to know who Cletus
is.
I don't know.
I mean, he's coach in Major League Soccer, an assistant. I think
Mathis spent some time in Hanover. Maybe
did.
Someone that knew him.
You're probably right. Jeff Agus.
Jeff Agus is big on the administration side of soccer, I would say yes.
Really? Just because he's like the competition guy at MLS, he would know who he is? Really?
I mean there was a time he was kind of in the administration at New York Red Bulls, too.
He knows Kobe. He knows Dolo. He knows Josh Wolf.
Yes.
Carlos Llamosa.
Not a chance. Carlos Hermoso, also one of the most underrated U.S. National League players of all time.
He knows DMB. He knows DeMarcus Beasley. He knows Casey Keller. He knows Tony Meola. He knows Brian McBride. He knows Landon Donovan. We talked about Tony Santa. He knows Eddie Pope. That's not bad. Come on.
Yeah, there's a couple in there.
That's not terrible. Interesting list. Know who your forebears were, basically, is what we're saying, right?
So, like, and if you're a listener out there that's younger than us, go research a couple of those names. You might be happy with a few.
You're like, who is that? I don't know who that is. Yeah, go look up the generation.
Look up Tony Santa, for God's sakes. Fantastic. Yeah. The Black Panther? Big Cat.
Big Cat. Yeah, Big Cat.
Know what they call him? What was his name? His nickname. It was like,
I think it was something Cat, wasn't
something
it?
Something Cat. I can't remember what it was now, though. But, I mean, literally, he probably is the U.S. national team player that can play the most positions on the field.
It was Big Cat. Big Cat.
I don't think there's ever been a U.S. national team player that could play almost every position on the field like Tony Santa could.
Tony Santa was brilliant as an all-around player. I mean, obviously, his level, I think, limited by the era he came up in American soccer, right? Like, if Tony Santa was 15 years younger, he would have had an incredible European career. Absolutely. I'm not saying he would have been Champions League level player, but he would have had an incredible European career. And he was a tall, lanky dude who could play all the flank positions as well. Yeah. Like, it was just wild
up
to
top,
watch him.
In the defense, like in the midfield. Crazy, crazy utility player.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, where are we going from that? You want to talk about strikers real quick? You want to talk about the situation
real quick,
there?
Then before we get to the women's team.
Now, you mentioned Jordan Pefok. I think Jordan Pefok probably is in the conversation. I don't know how he's not.
Is he the penciled-in starter right now? If you were penciled-in a 9 on this team right now, Pefok's job to lose? Having
God,
not played, at, not even called up for the last window.
The cupboard is so bare right now. I mean, look,
I've got a different name.
I will say that for that point, that he wasn't called in the last window, could he start in any of the 3 games left and qualify? Berhalter called up Walker Zimmerman when he had a hole to fill, not because he called him up originally, but because he needed a replacement, and Walker's become a critical piece of this team. So I think it's very possible if Berhalter says, screw it, we got to win games, I don't care. I do think he likes players he knows and is comfortable with and has seen. I don't think you're going to see a bunch of new introductions right now. Like, don't come at me with a bunch of players who haven't been.
I think Pefok's a lock for the squad, but I'd put a Benjamin on Jesus Ferreira starting in Mexico.
Okay.
I think just the position on the field he plays in, he's going to be off the back line, which is going to help with that midfield. If you win the ball in midfield, you want him close to the ball to combine.
This didn't work the last time he tried. Not really.
I think he looked good. I honestly think he looked
good
in those
Salvador.
Games.
Could you
I know
see,
he missed some chances. I know he did.
So against Mexico, the way Mexico plays, and Mexico's going to, you can draw Mexico out, right? Because they want to play with the ball. Can you see Weah, Pulisic getting in behind with Ferreira dropping in, hopefully dragging a center back with him and creating space? Is that possible? Can you see combination?
Can you
see Pulisic cutting
Jesus,
in?
Jesus Ferreira played these last two games in this window. I saw some of the best movement in the forward three and positional, like, responsibility, ownership of what was going on. It worked way better than when we've seen Pepe and Sargent, Pefok, DK,
let's just go through these imperfect options. So you have Jesus Ferreira, who is more of a false nine than a back to goal. He's not a back to goal player at all. You have Daryl DK, who is coming back from injury, and he may be ready by then, but he's very much in the Giovanni Reyna camp, where you're not 100% sure of his fitness.
I can't see it coming in.
There's Jordan Pefok, who scored his last goal was from the penalty spot, and I know they all count the same, but I'm just pointing out that he's playing in a level where there's at least a little bit of question. He's scoring goals. You have Josh Sargent, who's not playing as a center forward, playing well, scored some goals, played well against, was it Manchester City? Liverpool. Played well against Liverpool, had an assist in that game, but isn't playing center forward right now for his club team. You have Jossie Zardes, who is an imperfect option in any case, no matter what the situation. Yep. Who am I missing? Am I missing anybody else?
I mean, you're not missing anyone that's necessarily important. Did you say Pepe?
Pepe deserves a mention, but he can't score in Germany. Now he's a bench player after having arrived. So what's his status?
It's a tough one, man. And so, like, the other for me, I still put Jesus Ferrer in the top spot, not just as a striker, but just from a team perspective, a team guy. Because here's what I like about when Jesus Ferrer is on the field. Christian Pulisic loves to come inside, right?
Yes.
Loves to come inside.
Yeah.
So there's space for the interchange there.
Christian Pulisic starts on the left, always moves right for some reason. I don't.
Okay.
What is
and
that?
So
he's always
what
moving
Jesus
to the
Ferreira
line.
Has the ability to do that I don't think these other strikers do is to interchange, pull a center defender out into that space Pulisic has left open for that channel for Pulisic to come in. And if the ball comes back out to Ferreira on the outside, I feel far more comfortable with him at the ball at his feet to create than I do with any of those other strikers at the corner of the box.
Okay. Yeah. And you will presumably have Jedi Robinson involved somehow in that situation.
And I'll
well.
Say this, and mark your date. Nostradamus' expectations must have come true. I mean, the Ukraine's being invaded. The world's ending. I'm about to say this.
Mm-hmm.
I would take, in the Mexico game, I would take Josh Sargent second in that game over any of the guys
we said. We're talking about imperfect.
It's about
options.
Movement and combination. Yeah. It's not about him scoring.
We're talking
it's
about
responsibility
options.
And movement. And that's, I think Josh Sargent is a potential second choice for that.
I mean, the only, so Pepe is a player I would love to see get in form before we get to Mexico, because the story is there. Right, it's so easy. The story is so great. If he finishes a goal, he scores a goal at the Azteca against Mexico after choosing the United States over Mexico. I mean, it writes itself, right? The story, it's a movie right there. I want that to happen. I just don't think we're going to get it, because based on everything that's going on, he doesn't seem to have the confidence level. And look, I don't think you can blame him for having. We talked about this, right? When the idea that Ricardo Pepi might be sold this winter came up. You and I went through the scenario. Either he's a cold MLS player arriving in that January window, which we saw was they had an impact on those MLS players. Lots of guys who were very rusty in that window. Or he's a brand new player in a European environment trying to figure out what life is. You know, trying to figure out how to order coffee in German or tacos, probably not good ones, in German. I can he adjust quickly enough to be a factor for the national team? The scheduling issues that affected this group are real, right? Real.
Yeah, when we talked about Ricardo Pepi, it was like, go someplace we're going to play. Go someplace we're going to play. Is he going to play? Was this the right move already?
Yeah.
Already was it the right move?
Yeah.
This is a tough thing, because everything felt right. Everything felt right. All you had to do was play to his average expectations, and I just don't think that's been there yet. And they're in a situation at that club where they have to get points. So if he's not producing, they don't have time to have an experiment on their hands. They're going to go down. So it's a tough thing for Ricardo Pepi. I think maybe he doesn't get called in. I mean, if I'm picking strikers right now,
I think it's better than even odds that he starts in that game. I really do. I think Berhalter is, as much as he is the analytical guy, the matchup guy, you know, I don't know, there's a good striker for the matchup, but we've already talked ourselves into Jesus Ferreira as a false nine. I think he can see, and this is to Nicholas Murray's point, I think he sees that possible narrative as feeding Pepe, that maybe he'll rise to the occasion. And in that environment, I mean, look, that's gut. It's not something scientific that you can write down. They can put in, crunch the numbers. Let me know if Ricardo Pepi's the right guy to play against L3 in Mexico City. But he's a Mexican-American kid who chose the United States over the country of his parents. He's going to have family there. He's going to have the energy in the building feeding him. I think he's a cocky son of a bitch. And I think he might be the right guy just to say, hey, you know, do this. And really, you're rolling the dice no matter what. So why not roll the dice on the kid with skin in the game, especially skin in this particular game?
So play the guy, Ricardo Pepi, with a chip on his shoulder. Show him why he picked the United States. You put him out there, make a statement.
Sure. Why not? Why not?
Listen, if we're taking the approach of this game doesn't matter, then hell yeah.
It's not that it doesn't matter. It's that you are limiting.
We're de-emphasizing this game.
Sure. I think you have to prioritize Panama in a couple days after that. And then, you know, again.
If you want
to
win, I think you put Jesus Ferreira on the field. If you want to just try to see what you can do and have kind of a little bit of a throwaway game, I know no one's going to like to hear that. I think you put Ricardo Pepi in. But if you're trying to win it, I think it's Jesus Ferreira.
I've seen you've already talked yourself into Sargent being the second choice. I saw that idea partly because Sargent does work does defensive work, right? So, and by the way, that's the reason for Zardes to start as well, right? Zardes is not the goal-scoring center forward you want, but if you are concerned about just holding Mexico down and maybe trying to escape with a point, Zardes is not the worst option. He's
Remind
not.
Me, what's Chris Richards' status right now, injury status? Like,
I think he's fine. And by the way, I was just checking the prognosis on DK when he suffered the injury about a month ago was 8 weeks. So he's only a month into an 8 week injury.
But how are you going to come off an 8 week injury and all of a sudden be in front of a guy that's got 20 goals?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying that DK makes it. I'm saying DK might not even be an option for Berhalter. And we haven't seen any reason to think that Berhalter rates Daryl DK anyway, right? There's no
Morgan
reason.
Morgan just confirmed that Chris Richards came back this weekend for Hoffenheim.
Okay, so there you go.
Looks like definitely an option. Here's the other question. Miles Robinson and didn't get a couple games because obviously form... MLS is going to be in season by this point.
Yeah.
Not healthily in the season, not far into the season, but enough that the MLS guys should have enough health to be able to do two games if they need to.
You may see a pretty MLS-heavy team, especially against Mexico. He just might. I mean, Costa's going to be in the team. We already talked about this. He's an MLS player. I can see Berhalter talking himself into Zardes again. MLS player. Against Mexico, you know, do you roll the dice on Pulisic playing in that game? Or if you want to be more defensive, do you play... Brendan Aaronson's not an MLS guy, but you could talk yourself into Areola or Morris or...
If you can only play Pulisic two games, I'm skipping the Mexico game. I think that's probably right. If you're going to go three... Okay, yeah. Roll the dice.
So there's a lot going on while we're doing this live. Now, we do this live so you guys can call us up, which is brilliant, and I do think we have a call... in the queue. I'm not sure where we are with that one. I'll have to go and check the call situation. But we are here as the CONCACAF Champions League is unfolding. Apparently it's snowing in Colorado, so they're playing against Comunicaciones in the snow. I haven't checked the Montreal score. I know NYCFC already won, right? They're already done. And the U.S. Women's National Team is playing right now against Iceland in the She Believes Cup, and apparently Katarina Macario has scored a banger of a goal, and I haven't seen it, Jared, but I will give her a blind.
Oh, baby!
Why not? Live, why right not? In the moment. Katarina Macario is the truth. I saw that a couple times. Have you watched her play?
Just a bit.
Next level ball skills from Katarina Macario. I mean, I know we have very good national team players. We won a bunch of World Cups, the last two of them, but Katarina Macario is there.
Is Trinity Rodman getting minutes in this game? Morgan, do you know? I have not checked that.
She's not
starting this game.
Another reason to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team is the equal pay settlement. $22 million paid out to the plaintiffs with $2 million reserved as project money for former players to come up with ideas to help women's soccer, and they can apply for that. $50,000 per applicant if they
should
get
be said. The original lawsuit was 40 something, correct? Settled at 20.
No, they were talking about 60. But 60,
excuse me.
60
was the difference. I
inclusive of the difference in the prize money they would have gotten from FIFA if they had won the World Cup. And basically, I think what you got is the women saying, well, of course, we know that we should get 60 mil because we won the World Cup, but we're not going to bankrupt U.S. soccer in the process of settling this lawsuit. So they settled for 22. A lot of people painting this as a win, right? This is, especially considering a judge threw out the equal pay part of this, saying, hey, you negotiated different contracts. That's up to you. You chose a different pay structure. That's on you. This is tossed. U.S. soccer could have gone back to court on the appeal and maybe won. And the legal argument might have been a U.S. soccer side. But U.S. soccer was suffering from being just battered in the court of public opinion over this. I hope that this is a good resolution. Hope Solo does not think so. And I'm wondering how that's going to play out. I mean,
yeah, Hope Solo knows a good decision when she sees one.
Okay, that's not appropriate, dude.
I think it's accurate.
That's not the right
one. Damn, dog, that's inappropriate.
Okay, so
here's my thing. Here's why it's a good thing. Ultimately, the goal of this entire process should be and has become taking care of the future. That has been established through this.
Has it? Has it because of the CBA and the commitment to equal pay? Okay, so yeah. So I'm
commit
not
to equal
saying
pay, and they're going to be represented in each other's bargaining. Both the men and the women are going to be present in all bargaining.
Sure. U.S. Soccer has made they've kind of like we want everybody to have the same, so we're going to bring everybody together. You know, obviously, if the two sides want very different structures, that's going to be really hard to equalize, right? What is equal when the women want annual contracts, guaranteed deals, and the men want to be paid per game? Apparently, the women are willing to be paid per game. And if everybody buys into what's being sold, then yeah, that works. That's fine. I suppose you could argue that does set up for the future. But, you know, to Hope Solo's point, this is $22 million to those plaintiffs, not to the future players. This is just, oh, we got a promise from U.S. Soccer.
Okay, but that's
and
a little
if we get
pessimistic
a CBA done,
to me. Because if they were really gold digging this, they were out for themselves, trying to get this money for themselves, they would have gone back to court for the 60, try to get the 60.
They did. They were appealing. What I'm saying is, you're saying they would have kept going
settled.
With the appeal?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah, they already got smacked down once in court. So I guess, you know, sure. Why not go swing big again if you think you might have a chance? Sure. I suppose
I think
that's
this
true.
Is the best middle road option that takes care of both sides of the argument. For the players that missed out on a pretty significant payday, they're going to get some form of compensation for this. Not as much as they would have liked, but they're going to see it. And U.S. Soccer is acknowledging that there was something wrong with the way it was done. And then it takes care, hopefully, of the future as well, and takes care of a bit of that. I think it's a good result. I think it's hard to paint it a different way. You could say it's not perfect.
There's no
but
perfect
I think
result.
It's a pretty good
yeah.
result.
There's no perfect. That is fair to
especially
say.
Especially after being smacked down once, like you said.
Yeah, there's no perfect result here. There's going to be aggrieved parties. Hope Solo comes from the generation before. Well, she got forced out, obviously, for reasons, like you said, with decision making. And she was scapegoated. I don't think there's any arguing that she was scapegoated by U.S. Soccer. But she comes from a previous generation of players who, you know, they were taking a different tact. And Hope Solo is the kind of person who says, I have a different idea of how to do everything. So I don't know that there was going to be any agreement with her on this deal. I hope it does follow up with a CBA that's done with equalized pay. A part of this is that the U.S.
I don't understand. Maybe you do the statute of limitations part. How far back does it go, and who exactly gets paid out in this? That's the part I'm unclear on.
The people who sign on to the lawsuit get paid.
But they kept talking about
the
statute of limitations. There's a statute of limitations of time frame or something like that. And I'm not sure what that comes back to.
Yeah, I don't. I'd have to look that up.
I watched the interview on Good Morning America. By the way, it's a fantastic interview on Good Morning America, like a 7-minute segment. And I thought really good, honest questions. Cindy Parlow-Cohn there with Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan.
Yeah.
And listen, that's a tough position for Cindy Parlow-Cohn to be in. And I was kind of surprised to see them all there together. I really thought that might be a separate kind of interview, because Cindy Parlow-Cohn is a former player. She was accused by some people of not taking care of her folks a little bit, maybe not representing them as much as he should, or fighting and championing them the way that she would like to.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, she got a deal done.
That is a herding cats kind of job. I'm not saying that you get a pass if you're bad at it, the way that Carlos Cordero was bad at it. But it is a very difficult job. You have to keep constituencies.
I'll tell you what,
I bet
you there are a lot of people running federations across Europe that are not happy with her right now, because the European federations are going to see this. The players, women players around the world are going to see this and start pushing the hands. Do you think there's any chance the England women get the same amount as the England men, English men?
Yeah, but I think that I don't know about England, but I do know that there are plenty of countries that have already equalized pay between their two national teams. That has already happened in a couple of places, so it's not as though U.S. soccer is leading the way on that. So that's the thing. Okay, Wes is the call that I was talking about. I want to get to Wes, make sure we drop him in, because that's what this is all about. Wes in Idaho, our man with the beard, right?
I appreciate that you remember the beard. I really do.
Hard to forget.
We don't have a whole lot of Idaho representation. I think Connor and Wes are our Idahoans. Is that what you guys are called? Idahoans?
Well, I've been called worse.
By the way, Macario just scored again.
She scored again? It's two now? It's two for Macario now? Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay, go ahead, Wes. I'm sorry.
I wasn't going to talk about this, but real quick, if you want a good breakdown of the lawsuit for the women versus U.S. soccer, watch a video by Nate the Lawyer. He breaks it down. It's very, very fascinating. But I wanted to talk about midfield lineup for U.S. versus Mexico and what I think they should do, but I don't think Greg Berhalter will do in a million years.
Okay.
I'm thinking we should play a 4-2-3-1, and I want the two sixes to be Adams and Acosta, because Acosta, he's played – I didn't think I'd be saying this 6 months ago, but Acosta has played well when we've needed him to versus Mexico, yeah. And his set-piece play has been great, and I think we need a little bit of that grittiness with McKennie gone, and Acosta gives that.
He knows how to get under Mexico's skin.
The dark arts.
I do think that matters. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I was just going to say, Dunny says the dark arts, which makes perfect sense. And then I think we put Aronson in the 10 in the middle, just like he does with Salzburg. Ooh. And Weah or Pulisic. Weah and Pulisic on the wings. Maybe we say Pulisic, put somebody else on the left. But I think that gives us the best shot in Azteca.
You know, that's a double pivot with Aronson ahead of them is interesting, Jared, especially considering Mexico, who's going to have some of the ball. I mean, Aronson's energy, we talked about having it on the field.
Wes, who is your one up top?
One up top, I was listening to your conversation. I think it's either Ferreira or Pepe. I think it's got to be one of those two.
Man, I think it's tough to play a 4-2-3-1 with Ferreira up top.
I agree. I think you need somebody to stretch. You need somebody to stretch. You need somebody to lean on the center backs. You need somebody to. Somebody's got to create space for Aronson to operate in. If you have Ferreira, there's no space for Aronson to operate in.
I think you end up playing maybe even just Zardes in that game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Zardes will push.
No one's going to want to hear that. But in terms of if you want to play that formation, I think Jesse Zardes is the guy for that.
Zardes does have a tendency to drop in, but. You definitely need somebody who's going to stretch that back, who's going to push. So, yeah.
After seeing what Aronson does, the formation just makes sense to me, because we can then drop into a block of two lines of four, and then just have Aronson pestering whoever's got the ball as much as possible. And I think that gives us a great shot. That's my thought on
the other point
in the Azteca.
Yeah. I think the other point for this, the positive for this, is that one thing that you're noticing what works well for Brendan Aronson is late arrival. Mm-hmm. Late arrival works well for Brendan Aronson, and that formation really kind of speaks to that. Mm-hmm. That late run that cuts across, ball across the box,
and Pulisic getting to the end line, cutting balls back, Aronson to right. He just scored. That's how he scored. Just his last goal for Salzburg. So, yeah, I think that... By the way, Salzburg with like 15 COVID cases. I don't know if Aronson's one of them. Hopefully that's not an issue for him. Wes, I got to let you go. By the way, shout out to our man, Nicholas Supin, Super Bowl. Should we say that anymore? Should I move on?
Oh, man.
Supin Salad. Where's my man, Nick? Come here, Nick.
The Sausage Supin King of Chicago.
You pointed out something about Wes's midfield. What is that we need a nickname. We have to have nicknames for our midfield. What is that one?
It's the Triple A.
It's a Triple A. It's Aronson, Acosta, and Adams. It's a Triple A.
It's what you call when you're broke on the side of the road, which is kind of what we're doing right now.
That's right. You know,
McKennie caught a flat.
It's not quite Major League. It's Triple A.
He definitely blew a tire.
Yeah, there it is.
My man's got he lost a wheel, that's for sure.
We are getting to the end of this. It's been a couple of weeks. First of all, I want to say, you know, obviously Nick's team did not win the Super Bowl, but it was cool to follow his passion and follow the joy he was experiencing as that run unfolded. I was definitely rooting for the Bengals. I was rooting for your team too,
despite LA being in there. I was rooting for your team, Nick.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, your deep connections to the LA Rams. How far back do they go? Yeah, you guys had.
I went to a game back in the when they were originally here in the 80s. I went to the Rams game
back when they played in Anaheim.
What I was gonna say is I think the community of besties rallied around Nick in a very cool way. So I just wanted to say, like, I think we're all here to give a virtual hug to Nicholas Soup and Sausage.
Well, I appreciate
after
that.
His team. Yeah, yeah.
He shaved.
I got a haircut.
Yeah, he was crying in the mirror as he took it off.
Actually, my wife was begging me to keep it.
The
beard?
And you said no?
And I told her,
things up a little bit, huh?
I did not like
really?
It. Did not like
so
it.
So you're
at
telling
all.
Me that a little bit of scruff wasn't worth what could come from that?
Oh, it wasn't a little bit of scruff. I mean, it was the longest beard I've ever had.
Okay, but you so, basically pulled a Samson on yourself. I lost all your powers.
I will say that the maintenance issues they take over your life, and they take over your like your space, and then she may like it when she sees you with it, but then if you trim up and there's a mess, now she's mad at you because there's a mess in the bathroom.
We know how important facial hair is to women, because Jason would not shave his face to come clean on a bet, because he said his wife would kill him.
I don't know if you've ever met a Puerto Rican woman. I wouldn't want to fight her over this. I don't know why.
Then you shouldn't have bet something like that.
I know, I shouldn't have. You're right. No, that's my mistake.
We'll make sure your wife signs off on all your bets.
Yeah, we're going to be doing it later tonight, aren't we?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that Nicholas Soup and Sausage has FC Cincinnati to look forward to now, right? Like, we go straight into the MLS season. Let's
looking good
go.
The preseason, Nick.
Yeah.
They got some stuff happening, right?
I mean, we'll see. Look, they're going to be young. It's a new head coach, new GM. They're making some moves.
Is your team not sponsored by High Noon? High Noonan.
What is that?
You could be like, that should be. High Noon?
I've never heard of it until you just showed it.
Never had a high noon.
Oh, buddy. Oh,
probably some sort of seltzer.
Take it easy, boomers. Like, so. It's a seltzer made from vodka instead of beer, so you get more flavor because it doesn't take as much vodka as it does beer to get to that percentage, so you get a lot more flavor in it.
Okay, well, so that's actual vodka, because my understanding of all that stuff is it's all it's all malt beverage. Like, it's not.
No, this one's actually vodka. Liquor. That's why I can't get it in this stuff like BevMo or something. I have to go to get it. You know,
right? So we have state-run liquor stores. It would have to be in that store for me to get it, not in my grocery store where only beer and wine are sold.
High Noon, call me up, baby.
Yeah, I don't know why sponsorship we're doing going. Free ads. We don't have any ads. We're doing.
Man, I'm marketing. Someone's gotta. I'm marketing. Not social marketing.
We didn't prepare anything else about Nick's visit, so I don't want to put him on the spot for anything else. I think we're good, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're good. All right. Unless you want to get to this one last caller.
Yeah, let's do that. All right. Go ahead, figure that out, and we'll be back with the call.
Felix from Chicago. You might as well just take it.
Oh, it's Felix. Okay, we'll just take it on the air, and Nick can be part of it. All Felix, right. You're later than usual, Felix. You're usually our first call. What happened?
Life happened. Sorry, guys. first off, hard seltzer is an abomination. It's Zima. Ooh. It's a disgrace.
Wow.
He dropped the Z.
Have you had
you.
The High Noon?
No, I won't touch that. That stuff is not touching me.
Wait, so
you're the guy that doesn't watch the Bundesliga, but then says this guy's no good over there, you know. But you're not watching the game to know for sure.
I want to know why you believe this to be the case, Felix. Like, what is the argument against hard seltzer? I'm not a convert completely, but I have tried it. Why the issue?
It's just I don't know. I think maybe it's the old man in me. It's I don't know. I can't do it. There's just something. It's like wine cooler to me. It's Zima.
It is a little bit modern wine cooler, isn't it?
You're drinking it because it's sweet and it tastes good, not because there's booze.
What's wrong with booze, Bartles and James?
But you also know, Felix, that I'm a bourbon guy. I'm a very knowledgeable wine guy. It's not like I need sweet.
Jared literally invented
things.
He likes wine that tastes like dirt. Like, his palate is refined. How dare you, Felix?
I ain't doing hard seltzer.
All right, what you got? What
pistols
you got?
At noon, I'm, you I'm, and I, Felix.
High noon. I did want to say,
yeah, right, and truly and all that other, whatever that swill is. I do, because I missed most of the first part of the show. One thing that I just caught the tail end of it, and you guys are talking about, you know, this Mexico game might be like a throwaway game or something like that. I don't know if it was discussed. This might be the last competitive game they play in the Azteca for a long time, right? Yeah. The next World Cup, us and Mexico are both going to be hosts. There's probably not going to be a reason to play there. We don't really play Gold Cup or Nations League there. Right. Everything's always in the U.S. because of the money. So and then with the expanded World Cup, we don't know if we're ever going to be in a group with Mexico, you know, a qualifying group for a very long time. So this might be the last competitive fixture we have in the Azteca for a long time, at least in the near future. I don't know if that came up as a conversation point,
but is that,
and if
that's
that
not
might
a, that's,
be a motivation for the team.
It's not a reason to go for it. It's not a reason to go for it lineup wise. It's not because
it's almost more likely the U.S. will play in the Azteca, not against Mexico. Like, you could play in the Azteca in the next World Cup and Mexico won't even be there. Possible.
Yeah. I think the
but
only
it's
games...
beating Mexico in the Azteca, right? It's not beating Finland in the Azteca in the 2026 World Cup.
I don't know, man. I don't need that pin on my shoulder so bad that I would be willing to sacrifice potentially
the World Cup.
Making the World Cup.
No, you don't sacrifice making the World Cup.
I want it, Felix, man. I want it. You know, like, I do, but...
Yeah, like I hear you. I just wanted to throw out there as a discussion point, you know, and it's just something I haven't heard too many people say, because a lot of these players, right, this might be the last, if you're like an Adams or a Pulisic, I mean, you might be in your early mid-30s before there might be another competitive game that might come up there. So I wonder if that's being dangled as a, you know, as a cherry, you know what I mean? If you can get your win, if you can get your win, I mean, I know this is a bit far-fetched, but if you can get your win against Mexico, you've seen, as much as everyone likes to criticize Greg, his style works against Mexico. It doesn't work against, you know, other teams, but it works against Mexico. It really puts them on their heels. If he can get his win at Mexico, man, I think that takes a lot of pressure off the Panama
Cup.
The guy has
three wins against Mexico, though, Felix. He got three wins this year against Mexico. Does he really need it?
Last year. But to Felix's point, the Azteca is different than Vegas, Denver, and Cincy.
Does he want to be the guy that won four times against Mexico, once in Azteca, but missed the World Cup? No, he doesn't.
Well, he can't. Look, if you beat Mexico at the Azteca, you only need a point from the last two games, one of them at home, to qualify for the World Cup.
I only need two more inches to be in movies, but like, it's not likely. God. It's not likely.
Jay Rodius.
It's not worth it.
I think they can do both.
I agree. I'm
5'10". I got to be 6 foot.
I think they can do both. I think you can get a win or get a result. Let's just say that. Get a result in the Azteca. I think you can even... If you put a lot out there against Mexico, I think you can still get a result against Panama at home. I mean, I know everyone's nervous about this Panama game. That game away in Panama City a few months ago, as much as everyone wants to freak out about that, that was one of our worst squads we ever put out. They played terrible.
Yeah.
They've played terrible, and Panama only won 1-0 on an own goal. So this team is definitely ripe for the taking.
Okay.
And the all last right. games against Costa Rica, that scored like 7 goals in like 14 games.
Oh,
it's
a bad Costa Rica team. It's just history works against you so hard. And I know that history shouldn't matter in the moment, but every time I think we're going to go down to Costa Rica, we're going to beat them, we don't. So I don't know. It's tough.
Yes, this is just something I wanted to bring up at the end of the call. I know you guys are at the end of the show. I appreciate the time.
That's all
you guys
good.
Have a good week.
I appreciate it. Thank you to Felix for jumping in. Hating on Seltzer. Man, going hard. By the way, if you want to see Nick look like that on a weekly basis, you sign up for the Patreon and you get the video version of the bonus show. Because he looks like that pretty much every week, at least at some point.
I'm not sure the word Seltzer is anywhere on this can, to be honest.
Probably not.
It's something
it's probably
different.
Not. It's mixed drink in a can.
High noon. Call me up, baby.
Yeah. All right.
Not Jason. It's about time I get something for free around here.
We have other business.
I checked.
Business?
We don't have any new reviews.
Okay. Well, I was trying not to go in that direction just because
we
talked about it.
I'm tired of begging.
Oh, okay. Well,
you shouldn't have shaved your face.
Hold on. should we give more words, Jared? More code words to include in a review or two?
Oh, like Seltzer.
Seltzer should be in there.
Yeah,
Seltzer 2 inches. Be in there.
2 inches, Seltzer should be in there. You can put but you
how
put
about
beard?
Sausage for Nick
beard. I was gonna say
no 2 inches and sausage. You can't put both those in
no,
there.
No,
never mind. Hold
no
on.
Beard Seltzer 2 inches.
Get creative, folks.
AAA, throw AAA. Just I mean that we made a soccer reference, but put AAA in there too.
There you go.
Right. That's good. That's enough.
You have your assignment.
All right, thank you to Nikki Soup and Sausage for manning the phones as always and doing excellent work. I guess if that's it, I mean, again, it's a Wednesday, feels weird to even be here, but I think we covered all the bases that needed to be covered tonight, right?
I believe so. I think so. We could have done more on the MLS opening up. If you can tune in for the bonus show, we'll cover a bit of that.
Didn't have a lot of time for MLS. We're going to make some predictions. We're going to preview MLS a little bit. Talk about Jared's Galaxy and whether he's actually excited this year. Obviously, the FC Cincinnati is going to be a topic. I have heard that Montreal, they won 3-0 at home and beat Santos Laguna, Jared, on aggregate.
Santos is out. Colorado got a late winner. Take Leon out. You know, like... I mean, sorry, Comunicaciones.
They were supposed to beat them. They were supposed to beat them.
Sorry, right. Santos is out. It's interesting right here. I mean, Pumas will probably be in, but a couple of Mexican teams already getting potentially knocked out in this first round here. Kind of interesting.
Yeah. Cruz Azul has a narrow lead, but they're at home over FC Forge or Forge FC. It's some Canadian team. I think it's made up of truckers who are... Leave. I don't know. That is not going to go
I guess
anywhere.
They're good at parking the bus.
Ah, look at that. There it is. All right. Thank you very much for listening. Again, patreon.com/thebestsoccershow to get in on the bonus show and the Slack. I think we just added somebody to the Slack. I'm going to have to go check and congratulate them for jumping in. What else, Jared? Anything? Ratings and reviews? Or we mentioned that already with the words.
You know, go out there and give a retweet or a share to the Instagram. You know, Morgan's doing fantastic work out there.
Yeah,
share some of her stuff on the socials, you guys. Make sure you hit that button out there. Make sure her work is rewarded.
Yeah, I also, real quick, I don't even know if this is going to get back to anybody, but I want to congratulate a couple of people. First, Pablo Maurer, Meg Linehan, Katie Strang, Stephanie Young over at The Athletic. I think they just won an award for their investigative stuff that they did.
Nice.
Around the NWSL and everything else that went on with the Washington Spirit and all that. And shout out to, look, I made a joke earlier on the pre-show about the Cooligans. I love those guys. They're great. Morgan's friends with them. They just kind of rebooted their situation. They're no longer at FUBO. They're doing their own thing again. Just shout outs to the Cooligans. Shouts to the Cooligans. For what they're doing, because they're hustling just like the rest of us, and I respect it. All right, that's it. Jared, you want more High Noon? Another mention? One more?
I can pop another one.
Value added. We're out of here. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday. Bye.
Danger Zone!
Michael fucking Arrasco Pascal!
Eddie! What have you done for me lately?
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
It was there. Oh,
here we go, saucing him up. Hit him, hit him. What?
We are at DEFCON 1.
DEFCON 1?
The Sausage King of Chicago.
Oh, it's incredible!
What are we doing?
Get to the chopper!
Jay Rhodius.